Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Sheriff Bob Johnson, Santa Rosa County Sheriff. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. I wanted to start not with the obviously biggest story from last week. We'll get to it in a second. But I did want to start with the story that affects your agency. The coach who had been originally charged in connection with the allegations that he had made gun threats and or had a gun at the para field several months ago, and it, you know, doesn't look like he had a gun and made a conditional threat anyway. It wasn't a direct threat and all of that. Your agency had originally investigated that case and originally, you know, produced the charges, and then they were ultimately dropped. And I wanted to give you, now that the case has been resolved, I wanted to give you a chance to comment on it, because I know during you've been kind of, you know, reluctant to.
Yeah, well, you know, we kind of knew it was a strange case. So that's why, instead of just arresting the guy, what we did was we prepared a warrant, sent it to the state attorney who approved it, then sent it to a judge who approved it and signed it, and then he got arrested. So it wasn't, a lot of people think we just said, hey, we're going to arrest this guy. Woohoo, let's get him. It was approved by two separate parts of the judicial system, and now the charges are dropped. So we've done what we were supposed to do and how we were supposed to do it, and this is the outcome.
You know, the you know, sometimes police put together a case and a state attorney's office winds up, you know, dropping it later for whatever reason. I know we've got one of these going in Escambia County right now with the LD Clarity murder. You know, that there's a bit of a disagreement, obviously, between the state attorney and, you know, Sheriff Simmons' office over what was done right or wrong in the interrogation process. Yeah. In your case, when the sort of the facts of the matter came out, it seemed to me like it wasn't a threat. There wasn't a gun. It was conditional at best, and it was, you know, barely that. It didn't seem like charges based on what he said, but I don't know your side, and I have not read the report. Do you still think you guys kind of did the right thing?
Well, we did the right process. I mean, you know, we had it sent to the state attorney, who dropped charges after they approved the warrant and sent it to a judge. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, we don't have a say in it. Once it gets to the state attorney and they approve it, we don't have a say in it. It goes to a judge. If he approves it, then we serve the warrant. So, like I said, it wasn't like we just hooked him up right there at the para field and just said, hey, you know, then it would be on us. But we give all the facts to the state attorney's office. They approved it. Judge read it, said, hey, there's probable cause, signed it, and he got arrested. So,
and is that pretty typical for cases where you guys are, I mean, some cases are obvious, okay, as we're going to talk about in a second. In cases where you're less sure what to do, you kind of almost like a looking for a second opinion, basically?
Yeah, 100%. And that's why we send it to the state attorney's office, and the state attorney looks at it and says, hey, yeah, we can win this in court, or no, we can't, and sends it back. And it happens a lot where they'll send it back and say, no, you don't have it, and it's over right then and there. So in this case, that wasn't the case. They signed off on it, and then the judge signed off on it.
And kind of the other side of that, just because I see this on TV all the time, and I assume it's true, weirdly, one of those rare cases, do you guys consult with the SAO in advance in order to make sure that you're getting the elements and conducting the searches and producing the evidence properly in order to be able to make the case?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And we do that on investigations all the time, i.e. if we have a search warrant, we want to search a house, we let the state attorney look at it, and they go, yeah, you got it or you don't. And then we send it to a judge, and the judge will read it and say, you know, yeah, you have it or you don't. So we have two layers there, and if both layers approve the warrant or the search warrant or whatever it is, then that's when we take action.
Yeah, it's one of the things I think a lot of people don't really understand about the cops is your job is to make the cases happen. And if you can't make the case happen and get a conviction, then what's the point? You know, you're not, why bother doing it at all, right?
And that's why the state attorney comes into play, and that's why they look at it, and because they're the ones ultimately going to have to prosecute it. So that's why they read it over, and they'll sometimes send it back and say, you don't have it, and sometimes they'll say, yeah, go get them. So it just is what it is.
I do want to talk, I wish we did not have to, but of course, you and I talked about this last week, that, you know, the pretty rare to have murders in Santa Rosa County. And then it seems like all of a sudden in December, you've got the one in the South End, you've got the one in Milton, and then you had this just horrible story with Danica Troy. You know, you did a press conference, and sometimes I don't know how your officers do it. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how the ME, you know, looks at something like this. But I mean, it's genuinely an awful. Sheriff, you know, you had to do a press conference last week, and your investigators had to go to yet another and really terrible homicide in Danica Troy. I just want to warn people that are listening. If you have not heard this story, it is genuinely awful. It is maybe the kind of thing you don't want your kids to hear. So I'm kind of warning you, because I always think about, you know, moms and dads driving their kids to school and what they have to hear. But Sheriff, what can you tell us about this case?
Yeah, it's pretty horrific. So you have a 16-year-old boy and a 14-year-old boy, and they lure a girl out, a 14-year-old girl, out into the woods. The 16-year-old had stolen a 9mm from his mother's home, and they take her out in the woods. They shoot her multiple times, and then they set her on fire. And you think, you know, evil has a certain age to it, and you think you got to be semi-mature sometimes to commit such an evil or heinous act. But this just shows you, age doesn't matter. I mean, anybody that can come up with something like this and do that to another human being, they never need to see the light of day again.
You have said that you hope that they get charged as an adult. I don't know if that decision has been made yet. Of course, under 18, under a Supreme Court ruling, there is no capital punishment for anybody who is a minor at the time of the charge. But have you heard back from the SAO about whether that decision has been made yet?
No, they got to put it in front of a grand jury.
Okay.
And once that's done, then we'll get an answer. But yeah, these two never need to breathe free air again.
One of the things that had come up in context, you'd been asked at the press conference about charges against broadly any of the parents involved, whether the parents of Danica or the parents of the two alleged perpetrators, especially for the woman who had the gun that got it stolen, and whether she should have one in the first place. Anything you can tell us about that investigation or the responsibility component for the parents?
Yeah, that's going to be, funny enough, what we were just talking about, that's going to be submitted to the state attorney's office, and they'll come back and say yay or nay on whether she gets arrested for giving him access to a gun. And I don't know the specifics on how he got access to the gun. I mean, if she had it in a safe or something and he somehow found out the combination, obviously she's not going to be held responsible for that unless she told him the combination. But if it was under her pillow or in the dresser beside her bed or something like that, yeah, that'll be up to the state attorney to decide if she gets arrested or not.
When you had talked about this the other day, you had said you didn't have a motive because they're, I guess they said a motive and it wasn't adding up to the evidence.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of times you may not be able to say too much about this, but is there any part of this that we, because, you know, the rational person just, it's like there's some kinds of evil you can kind of understand and there's other kinds of evil you just can't even wrap your brain around. And I guess we all kind of, we wish we could at least understand a little, even though we know we can't. Is there any, can you clarify anything about that?
Yeah, not really. I mean, you know, they get interviewed and basically it's like, I don't want to give exact specifics, but it's something to the effect of she called them a name or something. And so obviously if you get called a name, you take people out in the woods, you shoot them and set them on fire. That's what you do. Yeah, it's just total lunacy.
Yeah.
And the fact that they could come up with this plan and the fact that, you know, they planned it and then take her out there and then do it. It's just beyond me. I mean, it's just, I'm in year 44 law enforcement and, you know, you think you've seen it all. And then something like this happens. You're like, you know, no words can explain it.
I guess a wanderer, basically a pedestrian, discovered her.
Yeah.
And then when you guys got on the scene, making the case, as you described, it was a ground ball. It was a very, very easy. The evidence, yeah, the chain, I guess her phone, I'm inferring that lots of things made it really easy to figure out what happened.
Yeah, it didn't take them long, and they had the suspects in custody and did the interviews and everything. So it was, but even for the investigators, you know, they're moms and dads.
Yeah.
They have children, and they have to go out, and they have to see this kind of stuff. And it takes a toll on them. So I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, these three families involved are all losing children, but the investigators have to go through it too, and it's pretty gut-wrenching.
To your knowledge, did either of the two teenagers express remorse in any way?
From what I've read, and I haven't read the entire file, there was no indication of remorse that I saw, but that's not saved. I didn't read the entire interview process either, so.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, a very dark day. I mean, very, for that school, you know, for the parents, for the community, yeah. for those of us who have to think about, you just don't yeah. want to think a 14 or a 16-year-old is capable, you know, of stuff yeah. like this, but, I mean, they yeah. are, unfortunately, they yeah. are. Any final words on this or anything else for us this week, Sheriff?
No, I just hope everybody has a great Christmas, and hopefully the month of December will quiet down for us, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, hug your kids, tell them you love them, pay attention. I mean, all the things that matter, right? Sheriff Bob Johnson, Santa Rosa Sheriff Bob Johnson, as always, sir, thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.